Well, it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can listen, of course, live every single Tuesday at 5 o'clock over at Joy 620. Or if you're not able to listen live, you can listen to the archive, to the podcast show at investinghope.com, Google Play, TuneIn, iTunes, wherever podcasts are found, you can find this show. We also just started a Facebook page, believe it or not, specifically for this show, and it is called A Conversation on Life with Andrew Wood. And so I'd love for you to follow that page. We'll be posting articles and different things that we are doing over there as well. And so are grateful again for your partnership and support. We are another week into the COVID-19 pandemic as Tennessee is one of the states around the country that are going to start opening things back up in May. And so we have the governor came out yesterday. Governor Lee came out and said, he is not going to extend the safe at home order past the end of April. And so it is going to expire. And then starting May 1st, we are going to start the phase process. And if you paid attention to any of what the president and the administration has been doing over the last few weeks, last week they announced phase one, phase two, phase three. And so slowly opening the country back up. And Tennessee will be starting phase one at the end of the month and on into May. And so it's going to be interesting to see what that looks like. The Knox County mayor, so for those of you that are local here in Knox County, Glenn Jacobs is our mayor, and he came out and said the health department is not going to extend this stay-at-home order either. It's going to take its cues from the governor. And so the end of April looks like the safe-at-home order for the state for here in Knox County is going to be lifted. And then we can slowly start getting back to, I don't know if we'll ever be back to what we consider normal, but getting back to something, restaurants starting to open up, gyms, hair salons, those type things in the very near future. So as we look at that, a lot of folks are having to juggle a lot of things. We have kids that are out of school. We have the school has come out and said, hey, no more school for the rest of the year. And so that means a lot of parents are trying to figure out, well, how do I work? How do I do distance learning? How do I do all of these things? Some of the child care facilities are closed. And so it's a wrestling match as we try to all figure this out. One thing I would caution you in doing moving forward is don't let this time, especially the time with your family and with your children, be a burden. I was texting with someone the other day, and I was just asking how things are going. And the first thing that I received back was something about the kids. And look, the kids are going to get restless. They're going to at times be unruly. It certainly happens at the Woodhouse. I'm sure it happens at your house as well. But think of these moments, the extra time that you have with your children, the extra time that you have with family, if you have that time. Be good stewards of that time. And that can look like a number of different things. But are you being a good steward of that time? And for some of us, me included, I need to preach this to myself. We need to put our phone down, put the news down, and get away from the news cycle for a day, for a couple days, heck, for a couple hours. And so are we doing that in those moments? And I pray that you are. Today, what we're going to do is talk about, there's a couple articles going that are out right now that I think is important and we need to cover. There's one dealing with Rewire News, which is not a great website, but every now and then we need to pay attention to what they're doing, and they are changing some language when it comes to abortion, and it's interesting that they are doing that. And we're going to talk about, there's an article in National Review that discusses why they think they're changing the terminology when they talk about abortion. We're also going to look at an article out of a Harvard magazine that is pointing its fingers at homeschooling and saying that homeschooling is the worst thing ever, and that parents, the last thing the parents need is more authority over their children. And so, yes, we're going to look at that, and yes, I'm going to pick it apart. And so it's going to be fun, and so we'll talk about this throughout today's show. But we're going to start with an article over at National Review. I cite National Review a lot because they're good, and would encourage this. I'll be posting this over on Facebook as well. So Rewire News, an online pro-abortion publication, is rarely worth paying attention to. But occasionally, the site features an article that proves useful for highlighting a trend in the changing policy goals or rhetoric of the abortion rights movement most radical wing. The site's latest editorial is an example of the latter, giving insight into how abortion advocates shift their language to influence public perception of what abortion is, and as a consequence, whether it should be permitted. Notes on language, why we stopped using surgical abortion. That is what Rewire News wrote about. That's the title of their article, written by Rewire's managing editor, Regina Mahone, who outlines a recent change to the site's style guide. It says this, quote, "Instead of referring to medication and surgical abortion to distinguish between abortions induced by pills and abortions performed as an in-clinic procedure, Rewire News will use medication and procedural abortion," Mahone writes. She says this, "The term surgical abortion has been used by health professionals and until now by Rewire News to define any clinic abortion not induced by medication. For pregnancies in the first trimester, which is when the vast majority of abortions occur, this involves a procedure called vacuum aspiration. The word surgical in this instance is misleading. The procedure doesn't typically require cutting or suturing of any kind. It's a 5 to 10 minute process involving gentle suction to remove the products of conception from the uterus." Did you just hear that last line? Think about that. It's a 5 to 10 minute process involving gentle suction to remove the products of conception from the uterus. Now, folks, do you know what products of conception are? Well, look in the mirror. You are a product of conception. My children are products of conception. Every human that we've ever come in contact with is a product of conception. And I don't know. I mean, if we could ask those babies that were aborted, if that was a gentle suction that removed them from the uterus, I would wage and argue that they would probably say it wasn't so gentle. Now, I don't want to get graphic, but sucking a baby out of the womb is not gentle in any shape, form, or fashion. Mahone then notes that anti-abortion activists have weaponized the term surgical abortion. In the era of COVID-19, as governors across the country have deemed elective abortions non-essential in order to prevent the spread of disease and conserve medical resources for emergency procedures. Using language that accurately describes the realities of abortion care won't stop lawmakers or state officials from trying to take away the constitutional right to abortion, Mahone concludes. But it does contribute to our ongoing efforts to reduce the abortion stigma in the news. And then the author of the National Review article goes further. Articles such as this one are far more revealing than the authors intend. The battle for public opinion on abortion most often takes the form of a battle over terms. For instance, is a person who supports legal abortion in most circumstances pro-abortion or pro-choice or abortion rights supporter? Should those who oppose legal abortion be called pro-life or anti-abortion or anti-choice? Is a human being in utero a fetus or an unborn child or, as Mahone so blandly puts it, a product of conception? These quibbles tend to take up the most space in our broader arguments over abortion policy. An editorial choice like the one Mahone outlines for Rewire gives away the game. In contrast to abortion rights advocates, most opponents of abortion view terminology as a secondary concern. I care relatively little whether one wishes to use the term partial birth abortion or intact dilation and extraction. My primary concern is that we discuss and eliminate a procedure that entails partially delivering a living human being, puncturing its skull, removing the contents, and dissecting its body for removal from its mother. Likewise, it matters little to me whether Rewire would rather refer to surgical or procedural abortion. What actually matters is what happens in that procedure. My concern about addressing the reality of abortion is precisely why Rewire's editorial staff has chosen to alter its terms and taken great pains to explain the reasoning behind that choice. What they call reducing abortion stigma is in fact an effort to further obscure from public view through the use of vague or euphemistic language, the truth of what takes place in an abortion procedure. Mahone's emphasis on clarity of terms is in fact part of ongoing campaign to further obfuscate the indisputable fact that each abortion ends a human life. Our dispute is not in the end over language or terms. It is a dispute over whether to permit the act that abortion is, no matter what we call it. So that's where we are. You see, they're wanting to change the language. Why are they wanting to change the language? Well, surgical abortion makes them uncomfortable. You see, they know that if they detail exactly what is happening, that the consensus from the populace is going to be, hold on, I don't know if I agree with that procedure. Because the reality is a lot of folks don't know what an abortion involves, especially a surgical abortion. So when you so flippantly say, oh, we're just, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of gentle sucking the products of conception out of the uterus, it's no big deal. Which obviously the first question has to be, well, hold on, what is the products of conception again? Because here's the thing, folks. Here's the thing. If I came out tomorrow and said, look, I have a new business model. Here's the business model. We are going to gently use a procedure that gently sucks out the products of conception out of animals. What do you think would happen? If we use the same language that we use for human beings when it comes to abortion, if we use that same language on dogs, we'd have protests in the street. Oh, well, you don't know if that would be true. Well, I kind of do, because in New Jersey, you know what they said? In New Jersey, you cannot slaughter a cow if that cow is pregnant. Well, why not? Can't you just gently remove the products of conception out of the womb of the cow? No, it's because we live in an upside-down world where pro-abortion politicians will pass a bill that protects an innocent little calf inside of the womb of a mama cow. But in the same breath, in the same session, we'll pass legislation that will allow for abortion of a human all the way up until the end of the pregnancy. It's the same way where we've seen politicians during this pandemic who out of one side of their mouth are saying, if social distancing, if safe at home orders, if forcing people into their homes will save just one life, then it's worth it. And out of that same mouth saying, abortion is an essential. We've even had the governor of Michigan say, not only is it essential, abortion saves lives. Well, that's not true. It's just not true. A successful, and we've said this on here, I don't know, I've said it 1,000 times. A successful abortion. What is deemed a successful abortion ends the life of a human being every single time. What is an unsuccessful abortion? An unsuccessful abortion is when the baby survives. That's their definitions, not mine. So how can abortion save lives? It's just not happening. It's just not happening. And so as we walk through this, and some seek to change the wording and terminology that we use around abortion, the fact of the matter is, regardless of what you call it, products of conception are human beings. Gently sucking out products of conception out of a uterus is ending the life of a human being. You can call it what you want. You can change the terminology all you want. It does not change the fact that abortion ends the life of a human, and we should stand up in opposition to that every single time. We'll be back.
And they are inside your head. You got a voice that sounds. You won't get past this one. You won't win your freedom. It's like a constant war, and you wanna settle that score.
So as we continue today, we're going to talk right now about something that I think just involves us as a collective. It's not necessarily having to do with abortion, but I do want to point out, first off, I would say If you're listening to this, raise your hand in the air if you have ever read anything from Harvard Magazine. Yeah, okay, me neither. And so, but they came out with a publication lately, or an article recently concerning homeschooling. And so there's a lot of conversations going on right now with folks that are doing distance learning, and some are dabbling in homeschooling. Well, maybe we can do this, maybe we can't. Maybe we can do a co-op, maybe we can do different things. And so with that being said, there are some folks that aren't just, aren't just like, well, you know, homeschooling is not for us. You know, maybe a lot of you listening to this are going, well, we love homeschool. Or maybe you're saying, look, homeschooling is great, but it's not for our family. But more power to you if you pursue it. Well, this article goes further than that. It isn't just, hey, whatever you want to do. It is detrimental to our society and to our country. And I think you'll be interested to hear why they believe that. And so let's just look at the article itself. It's called The Risk of Homeschooling by Aaron O'Donnell in Harvard Magazine. A rapidly increasing number of American families are opting out of sending their children to school, choosing instead to educate them at home. Homeschool kids now account for roughly 3-4% of school-aged children in the U.S., a number equivalent to those attending charter schools and larger than the number currently in parochial schools. Yet Elizabeth Bartlett, of the Public Interest Professor of Law and Faculty Director of the Law School's Child Advocacy Program, see risk for children and society in homeschooling and recommends a presumptive ban on the practice. Yeah, that you heard that right. Old Elizabeth is wanting to ban homeschooling. Homeschooling, she says, not only violates children's rights to a meaningful education and their right to be protected from potential child abuse, but may keep them from contributing positively to a democratic society. Now, I will note that she believes that homeschooling keeps the child from being protected from potential child abuse. Because we know that no child's ever been abused in a public school or a private school or any other school, right? Well, of course that's not true. She goes further. We have essentially unregulated regime in the areas of homeschooling. She says all 50 states have laws that make education compulsory, and state constitutions ensure a right to education. But if you look at the legal regime governing homeschooling, there are very few requirements that parents do anything. Even apparent requirements such as submitting a curricula or providing evidence that teaching and learning are taking place, she says, aren't necessarily enforced. Only about a dozen states have rules about the level of education needed by parents who homeschooled, she adds. That means effectively that people can homeschool who've never gone to school themselves, who don't read or write themselves. In another handful of states, parents are not required to register their children as homeschooled. They can simply keep their kids at home. This practice, Bartlett says, can isolate children. She argues that one benefit of sending children to school at age 4 or 5 is that teachers are mandated reporters, required to alert authorities to evidence of child abuse or neglect. Teachers and other school personnel constitute the largest percentage of people who report to Child Protective Services. She explains, whereas not one of the 50 states requires that homeschooling parents be checked for prior reports of child abuse. As an example, she points in the memoir Educated by Tara Westover, the daughter of Idaho survivalists who never sent their children to school. Although Westover learned to read, she writes that she received no other formal education at home, but instead spent her teenage years working in her father's scrap business, where severe injuries were common and endured abuse by an older brother. Bartlett doesn't see the book as an isolated case of family that slipped through the cracks. That's what can happen under the system in effect in most of the nation. Now, think about that. She pulls out of all the populace of this country, 327 million people, okay? And if 3-4% of the children are being homeschooled across this country, she's saying this one case where a girl was abused needs to be put across the board and represent all cases of homeschool parents. Look, I know a lot of homeschool families. When I worked at the University of Tennessee and I was recruiting students and working the admissions office, I met with a lot of students that were homeschooled. And guess what? They were admitted. They did well. Now, would it be right of me to take one of those situations and write an article and say, because this one student excelled, Homeschooling's the best option? Well, no, you need a bigger study than that. And in the same way, it's not right for this person to say, well, in this one case, this girl only learned to read and then had to live in some harsh situations, so homeschooling should be banned. The article goes further. In a paper published recently in the Arizona Law Review, she notes that parents choose homeschooling for an array of reasons. Some find local schools lacking or want to protect their child from bullying. Others do it to give their children the flexibility to pursue sports or other activities at a high level. But listen to this. This is the kicker. But surveys of homeschoolers show that a majority of such families, by some estimates, up to 90%, are driven by conservative Christian beliefs and seek to remove their children from mainstream culture. Ding, 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 ding. That's the winner. Oh, it's those conservative Christians wanting to change things up, so we should ban it. Bartlett notes that some of these parents are extreme religious ideologues who question science and promote female subservience and white supremacy. Now, again, that's nowhere near the majority of those that are homeschooling. But she's pulling that out. Excuse me. She views the absence of regulations ensuring that homeschool children receive a meaningful education equivalent to that required in public schools as a threat to U.S. democracy. She says this, quote, "From the beginning of compulsory education in this country, we have thought of the government as having some right to educate children so that they become active, productive participants in the larger society." She says this involves, in part, giving children the knowledge to eventually get jobs and support themselves. But it's also important that children grow up exposed to community values, social values, democratic values, ideas about non-discrimination and tolerance of other people's viewpoints. She says nothing that European countries such as Germany ban homeschooling, noting that European countries such as Germany ban homeschooling entirely, and that countries such as France require home visits and annual tests. And look, I'm no history buff. I did minor in history, but I don't know. Do a quick Google search. Has Germany ever done anything that we would kind of, you know, go, ugh, I don't know if we need to take Germany as kind of the leader in the way we educate children? Think about that. Think about that. In the United States, Bartlett says, state legislators have been hesitant to restrict the practice because of Homeschooling Legal Defense Association, a conservative Christian homeschool advocacy group, which she describes as small, well-organized, and overwhelmingly powerful politically. During the last 30 years, activists have worked to dismantle many states' homeschooling restrictions and have opposed new regulatory efforts. Bartlett maintains that parents should have very significant rights to raise their children with the beliefs and religious conviction that the parents hold. But requiring children to attend schools outside the home for 6 or 7 hours a day, she argues, does not unduly limit parents' influence on a child's views and ideas. The issue is, do we think that parents should have 24/7, essentially authoritarian control over their children from ages 0 to 18? Think about that. She's asking that question. She says that's dangerous. I think it's always dangerous to put powerful people in charge of the powerless and to give the powerful one's total authority. Well, I'm sorry, Miss Bartlett, but the Wood Kids, my products of conception, Gavin, Summer, Evelyn, and Charlie, I've been entrusted to raise them by the God of the universe, not by Harvard, not by the government, not by any other elitist institution. And so as we think about this, should I have 24/7 control? They want to use the word control over my kids from 0 to 18. Well, I don't have 24/7 control over them, but they are my children. And I'm going to answer to the Lord one day for the way they were raised and taken care of. That doesn't mean we restrict freedoms. They have freedoms just like everybody else. We're going to talk more about this when we come back. To the dreamers, wild believers, hanging on the hope by a thread. To the soulful, heart open, hopeful, keep on charging ahead. Cause when you feel it, once you see it, and you breathe it, it's unforgettable. When you know it, once you know it, and you hold it, it's unforgettable. So as we continue the conversation and look to an article over at Harvard Magazine, and some of you maybe, if you're just tuning in, you're going, why is he talking about homeschooling in Harvard Magazine. I'm talking about it because it's important for not just for Christians, not just for conservatives. This is important for anyone that parents a child and is thinking about the educational opportunities for that child. This matters to us. And the reason that I'm bringing it up is because a lot of times institutions like this, that of Harvard and other Ivy League type schools, lead the way. So now, I don't think we're on the verge of seeing a ban of homeschooling currently, but this could be the beginning of something greater. And so we do need to speak out. We do need to talk about it. And so we're going to continue with the article. And they go further. They say that the professor concedes that in some situations, homeschooling may be justified and effective. No doubt there are some parents who are motivated and capable of giving an education that's of a higher quality and as broad in scope as what happens in the public school. But Bartlett believes that if parents want permission, listen to that, if parents want permission to opt out of schools, the burden of proving that their case is justified should fall on who? The parents. Quote, I think an overwhelming majority of legislators and American people, if they looked at the situation, would conclude that something ought to be done. Now, it's interesting to me. It really is interesting to me, and this is where it's going to tie into what we talk about here every single week. Because I would venture to guess that this professor that was interviewed for this piece in Harvard Magazine, I would venture to guess, is staunchly pro-abortion. And has probably even been quoted as saying things like, my body, my choice. I would venture to guess this person has probably voted for pro-abortion candidates and leans far to the left. So how do you have those thoughts and opinions while also saying that families don't have a right to choose the educational opportunity for their child? I mean, to me, using Germany as an example, as, hey, Germany bans homeschooling. Oh, and we've never seen across any country, we've never seen a government abuse their power to brainwash kids within the school system. Am I like, are we really going to have this conversation? Now, the public school system in America is better than most, no question. And I don't believe we have an authoritarian regime seeking to brainwash. Now some could argue that within secondary education, there's a movement to push an agenda. But again, at that point, I mean, I went to a public institution in Middle Tennessee for my college degree. I was a political science major. Every single one of my professors were not just to the left. They were far left. They were open about it. But guess what? I was conservative, Christian, and open about it. And we had good dialogue and good arguments. And I did just fine. They didn't change my mind, and I'm sure I didn't change theirs. But just coming out and saying that we have to ban homeschool is ridiculous. And the interesting thing, too, is the image that goes, and I'll post this on our Facebook page, too. Again, A Conversation on Life with Andrew Wood. The image that goes along with this article, it has a house, and the window of the house has bars on it, like it's a prison. And there's all these kids running around and jump roping and playing with each other out in the yard. And this poor little homeschool kid, and I'll note this homeschool kid is redhead, and I take offense to that personally. But this poor little kid is inside and is being homeschooled and not getting to play with any friends. And then the house is made up of books. And if you look on the side of the house, they misspelled arithmetic. And then the Bible is one of those books. The Bible is one of those books that makes up this homeschool house. You see, this isn't just about homeschooling at all. This isn't about homeschooling at all. This is about a conservative Christian viewpoint that makes some folks not just uncomfortable, but makes folks angry to the point that they want to ban you and take rights away from you. She would probably also argue that just the Christian faith in general is pointless and should be banned. You know, when she talks about the rights and the freedoms and social values and democratic values, where do you think all of those came from? Where? The founders just made those up? Really? We're going to go down this path? They just made them up. Just sitting there one day and we're like, what would be a good thing to do? Yeah, we probably shouldn't kill each other. We probably shouldn't steal from each other. We probably should have rights to freedom, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. We probably should have those things. You think they just made all that up? Have you read the documents from our founders? No, they took those ideas and turned it into an ideal. And it was one of much of it taking from the inspiration of the Bible. And so the very values that we're trying to preach, the values that we're trying to instill into our children, even outside of a Christian ethic, the democratic values, as she worded it, is one that celebrates life, is one that celebrates liberty. Which means in America, you can send your kid to public school. Which means in America, you can send your kid to a Christian private school, to a secular private school, to a co-op that does school, does in-building schooling and homeschooling. Or you can choose to homeschool or online school. Or there's so many options. So from a mindset of pro-choice, right? So they want to scream all the time at us, look, we have the right to choose. Our choice matters to us. All of that. But not when it comes to school. You need to be educated a very particular way. And note that they're not saying that then when those kids are in those schools, that they can opt out of being told what to do by Planned Parenthood, or that they can opt out of certain things. No, you can't opt out. Homeschooling is banned. And if you did want to teach your schools from home, your kids from home, you're going to have to prove to the government. You're going to have to prove to some panel that you're worthy. That you're worthy to teach your children. Now, I get it. Some are going to listen to this and go, look, I have no desire to homeschool. I'm a Christian conservative, and I do not want to homeschool. That's okay. The point is, we should stand up for the rights of those that would like to do it. Right? For some of us, we're walking through this distance learning right now with our children and going, yeah, we don't want to have anything to do with that. Get them back in school as soon as we can. But for some of us, we're going, hey, you know, we've been kind of wanting to dabble with homeschooling or a co-op program. This is a great opportunity to see if that's going to work for our family. And I think on the other side of this pandemic, that 3-4% number that they were talking about in that article that are homeschooled, I think that number is going to go up. I really do. And here's the difference, too. In today's society, we have everything at our fingertips. Everything. Most of what the teachers are sending to my kids right now for distance learning, they're links on the internet, in YouTube, other places. And so the important thing is that we have the freedoms in this country to do what we see best for our children. Are there some folks out there that are being abusive in that? Yes. But guess what? There's abuse that happens in our public schools. There's abuse that happens in our private schools. There's abuse that happens in our charter schools. So that's not a good enough argument. But all of my kids have at least one thing in common. Their last name is Wood. Their last name isn't the government. So ultimately, I will answer to how they are raised. That is my responsibility. And so when I see things like this, I think this just points to what may be coming down the pike in the future. In a 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when folks start calling and saying, hey, homeschooling needs to stop, we need to ban it. We need to be prepared to stand up and say why we need to have the freedom to do that. And we're going to do that as long as we have breath in our lungs. We'll be back. The comfort of your misery, you cherish to leave. You cherish to leave. Your head started dreaming cause you're still fast asleep. You're fast asleep. Cause you wanna run wild, live free, love strong, you and me. You're a lion full of power who forgot how. So as we finish up today, hopefully you have enjoyed the show. Hopefully it's been fruitful. As we talked about, we started the show off by looking at Rewire News and how they're seeking to rewire our language when it comes to abortion. And then we looked at the article out of Harvard Magazine concerning homeschooling. Look, the reason I bring these things up is because it's important that we are able to have conversations on these issues. And when we look at the issue of abortion, just like the author over at National Review was saying, it doesn't matter what you call it. It doesn't matter how you label it. The fact remains, an abortion ends a life. And so in the same way, when it comes to someone seeking to ban homeschooling or any other liberties for that matter, you can call it what you want. You can say that we're seeking to ban it in the name of freedom. But the reality is there are some among us that seek to remove liberties and freedoms from people. Now, some people would hear that and go, well, that's exactly what you're doing when you say that you're pro-life. You're removing the liberty and freedom of a woman to have an abortion. And I would simply say, no. I'm protecting the freedom and liberty of the baby in the womb. You see, I believe, first and foremost, that Scripture tells us that every life is created by God. I then believe that there is a Bill of Rights and a constitution in this country that says everyone has the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You see, the difference with some of us is some of us believe that doesn't start until the baby takes its first breath out of the womb. I disagree. So I'm not seeking to remove liberties from people. I'm seeking to stand for those that have had their liberties removed since 1973. Like, do you see that? 60 million lives ended since 1973 due to abortion. So you can say it's a 5 or 10 minute process, simple, gentle suction of the products of conception. It doesn't change the fact that 60 million lives, 60 million individual, unique, never created before, never will be created again lives have been ended since 1973. You see, so when we stand up and say life is valuable, we're simply saying that these rights that we are so blessed to live under in this society and in this country should be afforded to the unborn. It really is that simple. Rights, mind you, that some folks in political circles seek to give to the animals among us, but keep from the humans among us. So we'll move heaven and earth to protect a rare species of turtle. But we will do nothing for the unborn baby. That doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense no matter how you square it, no matter how you look at it. It doesn't make sense that New Jersey has some of the most progressive and liberal abortion laws on the books. while also saying that we cannot slaughter a cow that has a baby inside of her. That does not make sense. It does not make sense that in some parts of this country, a drunk driver can hit a pregnant lady and is charged with two murders. But if that pregnant lady made it to the abortion clinic and ended the life of that baby inside of her, we just move on about our day. You see, that doesn't make sense. Logically, rationally, regardless of what side of the fence you're on, you cannot argue that that makes sense. And so this is why these type of conversations are important. So we can look at it from a point of view that says, do we believe in liberty for all, freedom for all, including the unborn, the most vulnerable among us, or not? And if you listen to this show long enough, I think you know where I stand on the issue. We believe in it fully. That's why we talk about it every single week. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much. Liberate your soul.